AM. We have a quorum of the audit committee. Hector is not here yet, but we have a quorum. I call this meeting of the audit committee of the Finance Commission of Texas to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. Moving on to the agenda items, we have a review and approval of the minutes of August 18th, 2017 audit committee. The first order of business is the approval of these minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on August 18th, 2017. These minutes were circulated to the members in the agenda packet.
Can I just add one thing? Since Vince is going to be absent, which we'll deal with in the main meeting, the rules allow me to step in his place, so I am.
It's Hector.
Hector moved to study and Vince moved to.
And sorry about that.
That's okay, last meeting. Yes, so I was just going to say, I'm stepping in for him so that.
Okay.
Which I can do based on the rules.
Great. All right. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting?
So moved.
Okay, Lori? Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Stacy?
Thank you.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, the ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay. Next we have the review of the agency's activities, and I believe, is it banking is up first, yep.
Okay, Stephanie Newberg, would you come forward and give our presentation, please?
Yes. Stephanie Newberg, Texas Department of Banking, ours begins on page 7. The first audit item was related to our state auditor's office audit last year and had to do with access rights to the programs, and I'm happy to report that in September of this year we did our annual review. It went much smoother this year because our information security officer met with every division when we were to go through their records and their programs, so it was much, much easier. We had a few minor problems, but we fixed all those, and so it was a much cleaner process than last year, so we consider that complete now. Our second outstanding item was related to the bank examination area for Garza and Gonzalez, and we have updated administrative memorandum 2015 where report-worthy items reconciled to the summary of report findings, and that's been implemented and the controls are now in place, so we consider that completed. We also received notice on October the 1st, or around the 1st of October, that we are in line to get a controller post-payment audit soon. Our questionnaire was due October the 16th. I think that was Monday we sent in the questionnaire. And we're just now waiting for the confirmation from them of when the work will start. We're thinking probably mid-November when they finish. I think with consumer credit, we will be next. And then on page 8 through 10 is a recent audit that we had from SORM. And the thing that I will point you to here is on page 10 itself where it says that the DOB fully recommended the recommendations from the prior year and there were no recommendations in this visit. So we were very, very excited about that.
And I want to congratulate you on your exemplary housekeeping.
Yeah. Really, you can't.
Have
thank
you ever
me.
Read a report like that before in your life?
Really, you can't thank me, Vance Ivy, who many of you know because he helped set up the room.
I think Charles is fully responsible.
And Sammy Chadley are the two that we need to thank for that. They do a really good job trying to keep our building up to code and safe. They really do. And then, lastly, overall, this is for all three agencies. Garza and Gonzalez is finishing up their risk assessments. I think they've talked to most of us about their ideas for the fiscal 18 audit plan, and I think they were going to send those to you to get your or get y'all's recommendations. And so we will be presenting that recommendation at the December meeting. Yeah, I can answer any questions. All right.
Okay. So we have. Thank you.
Department of Savings.
For savings and mortgage lending, on page 13, the first two recommendations under the Garza-Gonzalez MIS audit are ongoing. The Garza-Gonzalez thrift examination recommendation has been implemented, and the state auditor's office recommendation in the SDSI audit has also been completed.
Any questions? Okay, Commissioner.
Okay, and the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report is on page 14. We've reported four items here. Three of these outstanding items have been completed, including the older item from the DPS audit. As you may recall, we had to work through some technical issues with DPS to implement this finding, and those issues have been resolved, and we now have routine procedures in place related to this issue. And then there were two additional items from the Garza Gonzalez and Associates audit, which actually were completed at the last meeting, but you had just received the audit, so we didn't report those. We left those on and reported them completed now. They were completed during the audit, actually. And then the last item is also from a previous Garza Gonzalez and Associates audit. And that item is in progress, but it is due to be completed by the end of the month. So that's, and then I would also mention, as Stephanie mentioned, the comptroller post-payment audit. That audit is in progress for us right now, and we expect it to conclude today. So,
anybody have any questions? Okay. Discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's August 31st, 2017 investor officer report.
So moved.
I'll go through
the
discussion. The investment.
Sorry, you ready?
Yep.
Okay. Banking departments first. Russell, would you come forward, please? Be sure to state your name.
Good morning. My name is Russell Reese. I'm the director of the special audits for the Texas Department of Banking. I'm here to give you a brief overview of the trust funded and insurance funded quarterly investment report. Page 15 is where I'll start. Before I go, I would like to back up and just point out the guarantee fund. We actually have an advisory council that is comprised of three separate members. One's a trust funded, one's an insurance funded permit holder, and one is a consumer representative. They actually are a council that approves all the withdrawals for these particular funds. Just wanted to point that out for the new members. With that, on page 15, I will note this is a quarter from June to August 31st. We have $1.3 million in this fund. Since that is over a million, we do not assess our trust funded permit holders a dollar per contract once it hit $1 million. It's been many, many years since we have assessed our industry. I would highlight a couple of additions and withdrawals on this. For example, on number one, footnote, there is a restitution of 2250 paid to a BAS. And what that is restitution paid for something that happened many years ago, an illegal prepaid funeral contract was sold. We were a secure funds for them and paid them back. Correlated to that is on number two, footnote, on E, that's where we actually collect. The other one I'd like to point out is on the additions on number two, D, shows approximately $27,000 related to the El Paso. What happened there, we sent a lot of checks to consumers and they came back undeliverable. We have since sent the principal to the comptroller, and the interest was used to pay back the guarantee fund for some previous withdrawals for that defalcation.
Can I ask a question there, just so that I don't derail you? So on that, do we go through any steps like unclaimed property or posting it in the newspaper, if we mail restitution checks and they come back? I'm just wondering, were there any other additional measures?
Yes, there are several. This is kind of, this has been going on for quite a while in the El Paso.
And I know we've talked about it.
Yes, on different times, but that is correct. We have processes, procedures to try to ensure that we find those people, get their money, but sometimes we just can't, and then the comptroller will get those principal part, and so if those people ever do show up, that money is there at the comptroller. Okay. With that El Paso, I would like one more to point out, we actually had a summary judgment this week by the Texas Attorney General against restitution for them, and also this is a criminal case still ongoing in El Paso that's still pending. Was there any other questions related to that in the trust funded? Well, the next page is page 16, and this is the insurance-funded guarantee fund. As you note, not a much activity on this. This was just actual interest and trustee fees. We had no withdrawals on this for this quarter. In fact, we have had no withdrawals since the inception. This fund is about $478,000. We are still collecting a dollar per contract until that fund hits $1 million. Based on last year's, we had about 71,000 plus contracts sold. And so we're looking at probably about 7 more years at least of a dollar per contract to the insurance we'll pay until that hits $1 million. Is there any questions on page 16? Okay, we're going to go to page 17. I'm happy to report this is where it shows the seized funds, and we actually have zero. Historically, we usually have something in there seized, so it's very fortunate that we do not have any seized funds to report today. I will have one last statement for y'all. The guarantee fund, we are going to have a meeting, and that will be November 9th. To discuss investment changes that were made this last session. In fact, the Finance Commission on the seized funds, y'all approved the investment policy changes last meeting. But now we're going to meet on the Guarantee Fund Council for them to also approve the similar changes. With that, I will conclude my presentation if you have any additional questions or anything.
Thanks, Russ.
For savings and mortgage lending, the Mortgage Recovery Trust Fund is on page 18 and 19. This is a statutory fund. The purpose of the fund is to be utilized to reimburse out-of-pocket losses by acts or violations of licensed RMLOs, residential mortgage lending loan originators. It can also be utilized to reimburse expenses that the department has when or if loan files are abandoned by a company, for instance, and we have to travel to go gather those loan files up to keep them secure. Those funds can be used to reimburse the department for those expenses. And if there is more than $3.5 million in the trust fund, as there is, you can see on page 19, then the amount of money in excess of that amount can be used if we need to offset expenses of participating in the nationwide mortgage licensing system. It is funded by fees to the new loan, new licensee applications, and upon renewals. Now, the statutory maximum for the new applications is not to exceed $20. We have charged $10 for many years now. We've not hit that 20 for quite some time. And we have been waiving the renewal fee for this fund because, as you can see, we do not need those funds to be coming in to totally have a recovery fund available for consumers.
Commissioner Kay, question
yes.
on this. How do you determine which banks that you put the deposits at?
Do you want to speak to that? I'm going to call Antonia Antoff.
Just curious. Good morning. Antonia Antoff, Savings and Mortgage Lending. When we began putting the funds in CDs, then Commissioner Foster just emailed all the banks, and whoever showed interest in receiving funds, that's where we put the CDs. Okay. And this is how we do it now. We talk to the bank, and we have not had, there is no strict selection process. All these funds are insured by FDIC, so
there's no statutory requirement or qualification, so we
I was just curious, and then I noticed that some of the with interest it'd be over the insured amount, and I obviously you all know the safe
we,
ones
we,
to
no,
invest
we don't,
in, but,
yeah
know.
If it goes over, we request that the interest is paid to us by check, so
okay.
We don't go over,
right?
Yeah.
Okay,
they're all under the
yes.
insured
okay
amount.
Great,
yeah,
okay,
thanks.
I was just curious.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I did have one question.
Yes.
On the Recovery Trust Fund, you've got a note there of a reservation for a potential payment of a claim. And I don't know if you were planning on addressing that in the regular meeting or now, but typically we haven't had any claims of that size, so it did jump out at me. So I was just curious if you wanted to comment or not comment, or if you could comment.
Yeah, well, I can comment to the extent that it's under investigation.
Okay.
It's a potential claim payment. May or may not happen at this, may or may not take place.
So it's something
potential.
In process.
Correct.
But, okay.
Correct. And you'll see we did for 17, we had in 16, we had not had any payouts at all. 17, we did have two for a total of $8,566. And of course, just by saying we didn't have payouts does not mean that there weren't claims made and that we didn't investigate claims. It means we did not find any that we determined to be qualified to access the recovery fund, or the RMLO made the payment outside of the recovery fund. They often do that because if the fund pays on behalf of the RMLO, then we can revoke or suspend their license, and other states can as well. So if we make the determination that there is a proper claim and that it can be paid out of the fund, many times the respondent will step in and make that payment themselves.
I could imagine they might be motivated to do that.
So,
okay, and so you think within 90 days or so we'll know about that?
I don't see Ernest, but yes, I would think. Okay. I think. We'll report on it when we have a determination.
And I know statutorily you're very limited on the fund anyway, you can pay what you can pay.
Yes, okay. Yes. Payment through the fund cannot exceed $25,000. And again, it's acts and violations by individual residential mortgage loan originators.
Thank you.
Licensed.
Okay, and then the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner reports are on page 20 and 21, and I'll be providing those reports today. Christina Cuellar Hope is a little under the weather, so I'll be stepping in for her on our financial information today. But excuse me. So on page 20 is the Residential Mortgage Loan Originator Recovery Trust Fund, very similar fund that you heard, but a much, 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 much smaller fund because we have a much smaller population of folks. And this is just normal activity, normal additions to the fund. And so there's really nothing exciting to discuss about the normal activity of the additions and the interest paid, et cetera, on that page. On page 21 is the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund, and the audit committee has certainly spent a lot of time reviewing this fund and understands the purposes to provide statewide financial education, and that the grant program is administered out of this fund. You'll see the activity that's happened across the quarter with, again, some normal additions and then mostly just change in value associated with the investments of the fund. There was one grant disbursement, well, a series of grant disbursements, but for a total of $49,000 in the last quarter. And then so you see the final balance at fiscal year end 2017 of the fund is at $4 million. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I think the only question I have, and it echoes Molly's question at the last meeting, is will we have a presentation from the safekeeping in February?
February is when we typically schedule So we'll be anticipating that.
Okay. If there are any questions, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's August 31st, 2017 investment officer report?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next, we have the discussion and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the agency's 2017 fourth quarter financial statements.
Madam Chair, the first one is the Banking Department on page 22. Ms. Newberg, if you'd come forward, please.
Again, Stephanie Newberg with the Texas Department of Banking. Sammy Chadley asked me to apologize that he couldn't be here today. He had something unexpected come up and had to be out of town today. The first thing we're going to start talking about is on page 22 and 23. Under revenues, it looks like for the quarter that we did not collect all the revenues that we had expected, and that was done purposely. In the last quarter of the fiscal year, we knew that we were not going to expend all of the amount that we had budgeted in expenditures, mostly due to the staffing and the vacancies that we had that I'll discuss in a little bit. And we did not want to build up the fund balance for fiscal 2017. And so we went through an exercise and estimated all the expenses for the rest of the year and then discounted our assessments to try to come to almost zero amount, or it's, we didn't really want to go to zero, but it's close to zero as we thought we could without going into a negative position. So we ended the year with our revenues being at 93% of our original budget and our expenditures being at 92.9. So we really think we did a pretty good job at matching those to what we thought we were going to spend for the rest of the year.
Stephanie, if I could, if the members, I think, will remember that this is reoccurring on the fourth quarter. This is how we adjust the balance. And when we send out a notice to the banks, that a few of them remember that and or recognize it and say thank you. But I think it's appreciated by the industry. If we don't need the money, we give it back to them or don't collect it.
Right. And that will also reflect on page 24 under our fund balance. We ended the year with 2.72 months as our reserve, and that went up a little bit during the year because we knew we were going to do any rebates in the fourth quarter. We ended last year at 2.71% of expense of months, and this time we're at 2.72, and that was our goal, to keep that relatively constant. So we think we did the right thing with the forgiveness that we had. Under expenditures, of course, our biggest expenditure that we did not use was salaries. We probably averaged 15 employees for most of the year. We did comply with the hiring freeze, even though we didn't have to. But also part of it was we have positions built in for specialty examiners that if we find them, we will hire them. But if we can't find them, we don't. And so there is some positions that didn't get filled just because we could not find. There wasn't someone with that, the qualifications that we needed, that was looking for employment. So the salaries or the staff vacancies falls into travel in-state and out-of-state. We have less people doing going out on exams. We have less people doing education. So that fell into our employee training category. So that it was almost a ripple effect with our vacancies. One of the line items, though, that may look a little out of whack to you is professional fees. And in the beginning of 2017, we had a posting for a programmer, and we just could not find one. And the decision was made to use a temporary agency. So for most of 17, we had a contract person for our IT area, and that we paid through a service, and so that was considered a professional fee as opposed to a salary. So the $92,000 negative budget variance for the year, almost all of that relates to the contract employee, and this turned into a great success story because we had her all year and got things done, and she is now an employee of the agency, so we consider that a complete win. The other thing that we had in professional services is we have our DEX system, which was done or spearheaded by our strategic support area. And it is a system where our licensees can upload information for exams or for renewals or for any kind of filings, and our examiners can go get it. It can be sent to our imaging system. So it built in efficiencies for our agency and for our licensees. As we were finalizing the system, we realized that there were some aspects of it or some bells and whistles, not even bells and whistles, but think programs that we thought we really needed to make it work properly, and it was not in our original contract. And so we overspent in that area about $13,000 because we wanted to make it work, and we wanted to make it work easily for us and for our licensees. We knew we could go over that amount, sort of through a budget transfer, because in consumable supplies, we knew we were not, in the fourth quarter, that we were not going to upgrade our servers or our Skype technology because we were moving to Office 365. And we had put about $22,000 in the budget to do that. And then the decision was made in the last quarter to move to 365. So we knew those two could offset each other. Other than that, and other operating, our major variance there relates to just deferred maintenance that we didn't have to use, which I guess is a good thing. That's not a bad thing. And then on page 24, again, is our cash balances. We continue to have the $6 million reserve for the building. Under retirements, that is actually a calculation of everybody that's eligible to retire, what they would be paid in lump sum vacation if every person in that group left in the fiscal year.
Does that tie into the budget variance for lump sum retirement payments that did not occur?
We build in into the budget who we think may retire. We always put in an amount of some we think, and this is everybody else.
Okay.
Is there a mandatory retirement age?
No.
Don't look at me.
I wasn't.
Are there any other questions?
So you may have noticed we've not moved out of this building. So what,
yes.
What, if any, additional significant capital maintenance, capital expense has to be done in this building?
Well, we are in discussions and meetings with a contractor about the boiler, because when we started looking for a building, the boiler was on its last leg, and we've been told recently that there are no parts for our boiler anymore, that there are no parts. It is just too old, and so...
Are you going to wear sweaters?
Space heaters. So that is something that we, over the next month, are really going to start looking at. But, and that's the only one...
And that's it?
Well, and the elevator, you know, the elevator gets repaired about once a month, and it is very slow.
Safety first, you know.
So, right. So I think those are the two biggest, yeah. Biggest concerns. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. I'm going to call on Antonio Antoff to present the financials for savings and mortgage lending.
Savings and Mortgage Lending's fourth quarter financial statement begins on page 25, and the comments on the biggest variances are on page 26. Overall, we're at 25% over budget in revenues, and more than half of that is due to collected fines and penalties, which is almost $800,000. For comparison, last year we collected $1.9 million. Fines and penalties. Our thrift assessments are 13% over budget, mostly due to higher level of assets. We had budgeted for fourth quarter waiving of the assessment, and this is what happened. We did waive the fourth quarter for fifth or sixth year in a row. Our expenditures are 8% under budget, and this is mostly due to vacancies. As Stephanie said, this is the same for us. Vacancies reflect impact multiple categories of salaries, benefits, travel. The one item I'd like to go into more detail is the item that we went over. It's the other operating expenses. We went $11,000 over budget, and this is mostly due to higher employee training costs, fees for electronic payments, and fees for safekeeping trust bank charges. Our fees for electronic payments are directly related to the penalties that we receive. Out of the $800,000 of penalties, $500,000 were paid online through our system, and $325,000 of those were paid with credit cards. So the charges that we pay is 2.25% of the penalty for credit card charges. So if we receive more penalty, we pay more fees. The same is for the fees for safekeeping trust bank charges. They're based on the average balance in the fund, number of transactions. So as our fund balance is growing, we pay higher fees. But this is all offset by the higher depositor interest that we receive from trust. I'll be happy to address any questions on the fourth quarter. Our cash balance report is on page 27. Our cash reserves is at 10.4 months of next year's budget. For comparison, last quarter we were at 12.1 months, so it is going down as expected.
What's the level? Where are we headed with that?
We're hoping it's going to decrease next year. We have reduced fees again, licensing fees, and we are waiving the fourth quarter assessment. So we're hoping it's going to go down.
But I mean, what's the target? So the banking department's at 2.7. I want to say that
6.5.
So what's, and I know we've had this discussion before.
Right.
Do we have an optimal, you know, target that we're headed for? Or?
Well, our policy includes 6 months of operating reserves, in addition, any amounts for capital outlay or contingency FTEs. So we are shooting for 6 months.
Okay, the best, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, the best practices that we've reviewed in this committee range anywhere from, I think it's 2 to 6 months, depending on the cash flow issue
right.
of the agency. Or, and so that's, I think that's what the,
yeah, we
the
used
policy
it.
Says. And
yeah.
I think we've all gone through and trying to evaluate the what ifs and make sure that we have the ability to operate without, we don't have the ability to borrow money, and we certainly don't want to, well, excuse me, we do have the ability to borrow money, but we don't want to do that.
Right. And yeah, the policy was based on, as Commissioner Cooper said, the Government Fiscal Officers Association best practices policy, and they do mention 6 months, but it really depends on the volatility of the revenues or expenditures and for the regulated industries. So,
ours does go up and down because, as I'll mention later on, renewal period for every single licensee by state and federal statute is between November 1st and December 1st. So we're going to get the bulk of our revenue in the next few months, which means this could go back up again some. So just know that that's about to happen.
Yeah, and
plus the number of licensees continues to increase year to year, so our revenue increases.
I was just going to add this. The policy does recognize deviations occur for those seasonal type of revenue collections.
Sure, I get that, but I'm just, I guess I'd have to go back and look at the budget and how much you've decreased the, you know, the assessments in order
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
bring that down lower.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We have, I'm not going to remember the numbers exactly, but we have over the last few years just decreased the mortgage licensing numbers. We did, we made another round of lowerings this year, and I don't remember
right.
the exact numbers.
I want to say that the overall budget for the year is, we have budgeted for negative result of the year with almost $1 million. So this.
Due to mergers and things like that, is that what you're.
Yeah, we're going to collect less revenues than we're going to have expenditures.
So
well,
because
yes.
of the assessment
well,
we're going
to
balance.
Now,
yeah.
let me make a point on that, though. What we're seeing is when a thrift leaves, and you know, we've had a couple recently, and
right.
the first bank conversion, I'll say this later too, was completed on October 11th, but through organic growth, through the savings bank being the acquirer, we're more than making up for any loss in the assets of the system.
Okay. That's the only questions I have.
All right. Any other questions?
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
Okay. The Office of Consumer Credit report starts on page 29. And you'll see revenues are reported at 110% of projection. And there's just really a couple of items I would say. I mean, the credit access business came in at 108%, 109%. We had really projected a little bit stronger decline in that area, and we companies continued to renew and remain in the industry, which we had projected might have declined more. The refund anticipation loan providers have had a little resurgence and some growth going on in that activity with a new product and some strength in that market. So we had certainly more registrants in that area than we anticipated. And then in the mortgage loan originator area, we saw some decline over what we had expected. So we have fewer mortgage loan originators than we had anticipated. So that's really the revenue picture. But moving on to the expenditure picture, our expenditures are reported at 93% of what our projection had been. Just like the other two agencies, our primary driver of that is salaries and wages and travel. There were vacancies that we had delayed hiring because in spirit we had complied with the hiring freeze for most positions. And so that really results in some of that number, or the majority of that number. Item on professional fees and services, we had some legal fees that we had anticipated we might be responsible for, and those did not occur to the extent that we had projected. And then just a couple of other items, I guess really one to talk about is, and I've mentioned this to you at the last meeting and before, the development in progress, which was an IT development project, and that we had a deliverable phase that had been planned for very late FY16 and the very last weeks of FY16, and that deliverable phase got pushed into a couple weeks into FY17, and so we did not pay for it, of course, until it was delivered, and so that pushed the expense into this current year. And so beyond that, moving on to page 31 is our cash balance, which we've had the big discussion about a minute ago, but we're at roughly 6.5. We've just completed several renewals in the summer and in the fourth quarter, motor vehicle renewal being the primary renewal that's completed. And so there'll be sort of a low cycle through the first quarter of FY18, although we'll have a number of renewals that will begin starting mid-November, but those will carry on into December. So we'll see that process happen later. But I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. If we don't have any questions, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2017 fourth quarter financial statements?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
There's no opposed, so the ayes have it, and the motion passes. Next, we have a discussion of and possible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the readoption of the investment policies for the Department of Savings Mortgage Lending and the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. So, do you want to go through those? Is that the?
Sure, I'll call Antonia Antoff to go through the revisions on SMLs.
We have included in the packet a red line policy indicating all changes in a clean version of the new policy. In summary, the changes we're making come from legislation passed by the 85th legislature and a couple of clarifications due to existing statutes and a couple of word changes. I'll be happy to go ahead, you change one by one if you would like me to. The changes will not change anything in how we, in what we invest in, because our investments are only in CDs and the purchase agreements.
Did anybody have questions on them? I went through them, I didn't see anything, and it was very helpful how you guys had the actual statutes.
Mm-hmm.
That
very
was
helpful.
Very helpful.
Very.
Thank you.
So, anybody have questions for me? And then, do we want to go? It's pretty much the exact same thing.
Yes,
right?
Ours are very similar. There was a page on, there's some information on page 47. This is almost identical to what you received in the last meeting, because you may recall you approved changes to the Department of Banking's investment office,
right,
investment policy last meeting. And so we just reprinted some of the same information, that's what some of those legislative changes were. And ours are very consistent with those changes as well.
Okay, if there's no questions, do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the readoption of the investment policies for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending and the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner?
So moved.
Lori?
Second.
Stacy? Any discussion? Okay. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there opposed? The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Okay, next we have a discussion of impossible vote to recommend that the Finance Commission take action on the amount of funds the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending will contribute to the Texas Finance Education Endowment Fund. Okay. Commissioner, do you want to make any comment about that? We've talked about it before.
Right, yes, you all had, the Commission had voted at a previous meeting for SML to make a contribution to the Finance Commission's endowment fund, and we were to assess and determine the amount that we would recommend contributing, and that amount's $500,000. As you all may remember, there was a national settlement agreement signed by many states a few years ago due to which the agency received $500,000, and we have been using that for some mortgage fraud situations. However, we still have the bulk of it and wanted to do something appropriate and that would benefit consumers in the vein of what that settlement agreement was. And so that's what those funds are.
So the department determined that the amount to be contributed to the Texas Financial Education TIFI is $500 and is now seeking the commission approval on that amount. So do I hear a motion to recommend to the Finance Commission that the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending contribute $500,000 to TIFI?
So moved.
Okay, Lori?
Second.
Stacy, second. All in favor?
Aye.
No opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Okay, next we have a report on the activities relating to the department, to the TIFI.
Tiffy.
Good morning.
Thank you for that.
I'd like to call Juan Garcia, Deandra Sullivan to give the report on the Texas Financial Education Endowment.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Finance Commission, commissioners, and public. My name is Juan Garcia, and I am the Program Director for the Texas Financial Education Endowment. To my left, I have Deandra Sullivan, who is the Grant Coordinator for the Tiffy Fund. On page 67, you have a report for the TIFI activities that have occurred within the last 2 months. Following page 67, you have a summary of the recent submittal of activities for the TIFI grant that is within the second grant cycle. I am happy to report that the cycle is almost coming to an end. It will end on December 31st. And there's still $71,000 available for these entities that you have awarded during the second cycle to spend. The report is in detail, and it does give you a summary. Like I said, it's found on page 68 of the activity that has occurred within this, the period of January 1st, 2017, to June 30th of 2017. If there are no questions, then I'd like to talk about the third grant cycle. So yesterday, the Grant Advisory Committee met to discuss the 21 applicants that were being considered for the grant program. As you may recall, last meeting in August, you decided to allocate $250,000 for the third cycle. Let me just say that the total request was $832,000. And so the Grant Advisory Committee worked rigorously to evaluate and score the 23 entities. And I will say that the scoring was based on the alignment with TIFI objectives, experience and effectiveness of their program, value and program innovation, among other items. And so yesterday, as I mentioned, they met and they discussed the 22 applicants, and if you're wanting to see who they were, you will find them on page 80 of your packet. Now, what Deandra is going to be handing out right now is the actual recommendation that is coming from the Grant Advisory Committee for your consideration. I will also say that the list that you will have before you I don't want to say challenging, but they took their time to deliberate every possible outcome based on their selection. And one of the things that the GAC members wanted to make sure that was continued was the availability of funds throughout the state. And so the nine participants or the nine the nine recipients that you have before you represent the areas North Texas, South Texas, West Texas, and East Texas. And the categories that they decided to fund them for was the financial coaching, the K-12 initiatives, and the adult financial education and capability. And with that being said, there's a total of $250,000 that you have for consideration with these recipients. And I don't know if Lori would like to add any other comments based on her.
No, we really did scrub all of the applicants
thoroughly and had really valuable discussions and some additional things that in the future years we want to include in our reports for all the committee to see, so that we really do even out the playing field for everybody, including some of the applicants who maybe aren't as sophisticated in how they put their grants together, but they have very good programs. So, you know, I think yesterday was valuable. Every year we've met, we get more specific on what we want to look at and how we want to analyze the applications to make them more even in our analysis and our review. So, you know, everybody participated, and I think it was very helpful.
Commissioner Pettyton.
And I think we have a great group of applicants that we're going to disperse money to.
Yeah, I would just add, I think the Grant Advisory Committee really was very thoughtful about during the review and using their reviewing these applications against the rubric, the criteria that Juan mentioned some of. And then was very deliberate about ensuring that they followed the Finance Commission's stated priorities in those three particular categories of priority that the Finance Commission has laid out, and chose the highest scoring applicants within those categories, but then further deliberated to be sure that they were perhaps pulling some additional applicants that would ensure the geographic diversity of the state. And I know that has been an important point for the commission before, to be sure that it is representative. I was only going to add one more item, is that there was discussion, and certainly we are mindful of, and staff had studied and was aware of, if there were any potential compliance issues with a previous recipient, those were discussed and addressed as well. So that was also a part of the process. But I appreciate the work of the Grant Advisory Committee and Juan and Deandra as we move forward. And the Grant Advisory Committee presented to you this list of recommendations for 9 potential awards.
One of the things I noticed here also was that in all of the 9, you did 2-year programs, which is great because that's an improvement and gets some continuity versus the 1 year. I appreciate that y'all paid attention to the 2-year.
There was some good discussion about 1 year versus 2.
Yes, I'm sure there was, and I appreciate that because I think that gives some continuity to the program and some legs to it.
And I also want to recognize that Vince Puente joined us by conference call yesterday, so he was a very active participant in the discussion as well. We appreciated his contributions in that process.
And I only noticed that there's one that's a repeat, is that right? So the Goodwill Industries
We have two. Family is a Service Association of San Antonio.
And also Goodwill Industries of Central.
Yes.
Okay.
And there was no issue with doing repeats or anything like that?
No. That's correct.
Okay.
So I could read these into the record if you like, or you can hover. Okay. So the following are the Grant Advisory Committee recipients recommended by GAC, as I mentioned, for consideration before the Audit Committee. They are Building Financial Capacity Coalition from the Rio Grande Valley in the amount of $33,000. Center for Transforming Lives out of the DFW area, $33,000. Family Services Association of San Antonio out of the San Antonio area, $33,000. First Light Community Foundation, El Paso area, $16,000. Goodwill Industries of Central Texas here in Austin, $33,000. Harris County Department of Education, Houston area, $19,000. Trinity Basin Preparatory, they're in the DFW area, $17,000. Wesley Mission Center, DFW area, $33,000. And Women's Resource Greater Houston area, $33,000. And that does total to $250,000.
Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the final selection of the group that Juan just read off to receive grant funds in an aggregate amount of $250,000 from the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund?
So moved.
Second. Stacy, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 There is no opposed. The ayes have it, and the motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. There being no further business, the meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned. The time is 8:50.
I'm sorry.
Okay.